Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
All right, keep him good. Look, messages for Kildare coming in. I'll catch up with those in a couple of minutes. But I want to get underway with our opening topic. And I'm looking at the submission by the Fine Gael Party on the future of the Media Commission. And one of the paragraphs in that says, as we begin to emerge from the pandemic, a valuable lesson has been learned about protecting the future of good journalism. The establishment of the Commission on the Future of Media presents us with an opportunity to put ambition into action, to find innovative ways of creating a model of support that works. That is why we in Fine Gael have spent considerable time engaging with those on the front line of Irish journalism, the practitioners at both local and national level who have accumulated years of experience, wisdom and knowledge. We have learned much from that engagement. Joining us to discuss this submission is the chairman of the Independent Broadcasters of Ireland, but first the man behind this particular initiative, Dublin Bay North TD, former finance minister indeed, Richard Bruden. Good morning, gentlemen.
Hi, Clem.
Good morning.
And thank you both. Richard Bruden, we have learned much from this engagement. In what terms? For example, one of the points you make is, and of great relevance, and I might as well declare my interest here, I am a station, radio station owner, and along with the presenter, but I'm setting my interest on that aside in the interest of an impartial discussion here this morning. So we leave it to both yourself in terms of the presentation and to John Purcell, who is of course CEO of KCLR, our neighbours down in Carlow Kilkenny, but also chairman of the Independent Broadcasters Campaign, our Broadcasters of Ireland, and I know Richard you'll have been engaging with John on a regular basis as well. One of the points, well, for, I suppose, what motivated you to come about and carry out this submission?
Well, I think it was a realization that during the course of the pandemic, not only was it very true that we needed trusted and reliable sources of information at local level that could give people a message in a fair and objective way, but also I think there was a growing realization that, you know, the onward march of online platforms who, you know, are attracting advertising and the changing way, you know, particularly young people are consuming media, but increasingly all age groups are consuming media, you know, pointed to a real challenge. So I think the process here was, from our point of view, was really important. We had a little committee, Jerry Buttermer, Micheál Carrigy, Kieran Cannon and myself, and we engaged with, you know, 90 media outlets right across the country to get a survey of what their experience was like, but to talk through the issues. And I think what we have identified, I suppose, are, you know, we need, firstly, to support a transition that the sector is going to have to make. This is going to be a difficult few years as, you know, stations and local media, newspapers and online seek to carve a new future for themselves. We will need better copyright law, we will need to support online transition, we will need to support hubs and other ways of you know, collating material.
All right, I'll go into those specific points with you as we move along. The findings in your doc, in your submission, you shows an industry undergoing unprecedented change, which you've talked about. It changes that have been impacted, I'm quoting from your document, if not accelerated by the COVID-19 pandemic. Furthermore, prior to the pandemic, you talk about the different experiences of various sections of the overall media sector, whether it be local radio, KFM, KCLR, newspapers and so forth. And you point out in your submission that the radio sector has increased a listenership to over 80%, advertising to only plus 9%. But in that time, the radio sector, of course, amongst all other media, has suffered an enormous impact. So what about that first point in the first of your recommendations, that to continue the existing business supports for the local media sector until the economic recovery is secured?
Yeah, I think that's something that applies, like, in a lot of sectors who have been particularly badly affected, and I think the government has already indicated they're going to sustain the sort of programmes that are there. But in local media, I think there are much more long-term issues that just have to be addressed now, and there's an urgency about that. You know, you're seeing, particularly in the newspaper sector, even worse than the broadcasting sector, you're seeing a decline in circulation for them.
But Minister, sorry for interrupting you.
Advertising.
I'm sorry for interrupting your train of thought there. And you talk about the long-term view, and yes, that's extremely important. But, you know, government supports have been extremely significant in keeping the whole media sector supported during the current pandemic. That sort of instability is still there. So while I laud your ideas about the long term, surely the immediate thing is to create that stability across the whole media sector, whether it be radio, newspapers, etc.
Yeah, I think the government have been doing that. I mean, they've continued with wage subsidy support. You know, there have been a number of Sound and Vision programs issued for the broadcasting sector, and I think there will need to be a continuing focus on supporting. As you know, things get back on their feet. A lot of the you know, the sporting is only recovering. A lot of the things that are important are only recovering. So local media are going to struggle for a time. Advertising revenue is under very severe pressure. And as I say, I think that's a structural shift. It won't all come back after the pandemic is over.
And I wonder, do you envisage that structural shift might include a more diverse sharing of the licence income that's currently enjoyed almost exclusively by RTE?
Yeah, that's the other major recommendation that we make. We believe that the licence fee, the way it's collected, is well past its sell-by date. It's ownership of a television. That's no way to support you know, something as important as public service media. But secondly, we need to broaden what we regard as public service media from not solely the two major state broadcasters, but also to recognise local broadcasters and local other local media.
All right, Mr. Bruton, I'll just let you pause there for a moment. John Purcell, good morning to you, Chairman of the Independent Broadcasters of Ireland. What do you make of this submission?
I think it's a very positive development, really. I think, firstly, it's positive that the importance of the local media sector is recognised, and I think that's been apparent to all throughout the pandemic and even before it, but we've never seen it in a more clear fashion, that news, current affairs and accurate information is really critical to the cohesion of society, really. So that's very welcome. And I think also the government needs to be commended, and in particular Deputy Bruton, when he was the Minister with responsibility for the media back in, you know, March 2020, I think was, when the pandemic hit. We were faced with really an existential crisis and the imminent demise of the sector. We were looking at, we were within days of having to cease our news and current affairs output at the worst possible time. And as Deputy Bruton mentioned, the government brought in, and he specifically brought in, a special Sound and Vision scheme, which was absolutely critical in it, ensuring that people could continue to have on radio accurate news and information through really difficult times. And the government has brought in another one of those schemes. But as we all know, the pandemic hopefully is entering a different phase, and we have to look towards recovery. But the issues that we face are of more structural basis. You know, while listenership is very strong for radio, the business model is fundamentally under threat, and it's you know, interesting to see that the profits of the FANGs, you know, the Facebooks, Amazon's, networks, Google's, and so on, have almost increased by something like 50% during the pandemic, and they're doing that because they do targeted advertising, and they can provide, you know, drill down into audiences and operate in narrow targeting of audiences in a way which isn't good for society, number one, but it's very hard to compete against on a business basis. So we think it's a very good report. I welcome it very much, and I think we need to continue the debate, because it's important not only for our media businesses and the continuation of employment in that, but it's very important for society that we have a healthy media.
And on that point, John Purcell, and going back to you, Richard Bruton, on the points raised by John there in his contribution, one of the elements, of course, of the likes of online is that the whole element is what you're reading, is it genuine bona fide news, or is it that much used term fake news? And I mean, you make a point in your submission regarding that we must recognise the reach of local media and its reputation as a reliable and authoritative news source when evaluating what constitutes public service in the media sector. And given that all stations, whether it be KFM, KCLR or whatever, are our neighbours on the other side, Midlands, and all local stations, we have what many people might not understand or appreciate. We have a public service remit. And putting that together and authoritative news and output, as your submission has acknowledged, Minister, and what you referred to earlier, replacing the anomalous TV licence fee.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's two issues there. One is, I suppose, the regulatory oversight of these online platforms, and that is a very tricky area. Now, while I was Minister, I introduced the first piece of legislation, which is yet to be passed. It's bringing in an online commissioner who would oversee the codes of practice that they operate for taking down material. Now, the main focus of that legislation was on harmful content, but you can see that you could evolve a system to require greater scrutiny by the platforms of what they put up. And then the second thing is to recognise, as you rightly say, that, you know, public service media is not confined just to the national broadcasters, that from a point of view of a community, access to information about what's happening in their community, be it in the courts, the councils, on the playing fields, you know, in business, that's absolutely crucial, and we need to find a way of supporting it. And as I say, if we reform the licence fee, we can actually generate about 60, 70 million of revenue that we can then use in a way to help a transition in the sector, but also to support originality, reach, diversity, you know, all of those things that are important.
And how important would a digital tax be on the likes of Facebook and Google? After all, local media, whether it be radio stations or newspapers, we're all paying our taxes.
Well, a digital tax is a much wider thing. This is something, you know, that is hotly disputed in Europe between and the United States. It's a global issue, whether there should be a tax on digital content or whether these companies should be taxed in the normal way on their profits. It would, you know, if it goes ahead, it would have a very adverse impact on Ireland, you know, overall. But, you know, such a tax, if it came in, will not be reserved for any particular purpose.
Okay, John,
you know, you're talking about a very large sum of money globally being raised, but it'll go into just normal exchequer.
All right. John Purcell, what, from your perspective as chairman of the Independent Broadcasters of Ireland, is the most vital platform or things underpinning what you regard as the need to support media, whether it be newspapers or indeed radio across this country?
Well, I suppose you mentioned the phrase early on about turning ambition into action, and that's the most important thing. Everybody recognises the importance of a balanced, fair and media that brings public service content, whether it be at a national level or a local level. And now the time for action, and also there is an opportunity. So as Richard Bruton outlined, you know, if we sort out the licence fee or the media charge, there is a pot of money that can be realised. So it's a question of using that money for the public interest to ensure that it can contribute equitably to all levels of media, so that Irish society, because media and proper media has a very important role in maintaining a coherent society. We've seen the downsides of, you know, untrammelled access and no standards on social media. You know, you need only look back to January 6th in the Capitol, where, you know, in the US, the demise of local news is one of the factors very much to the fore in explaining why there's such a toxic political culture, because people need to be anchored to their local communities and so on. And equally, we need to have a national voice. I think that, you know, the Sound and Vision scheme, which was first introduced by Richard Bruton when he was minister, provides, this the special one for COVID, provides a blueprint and shows how public money can be used to support broadcast output for the public good. So we think, you know, something like that could be put in on an ongoing basis. We're not looking for money to add to our bottom line, but simply support to allow us to continue to deliver media material that is gives people information that's required, that does so in an accountable, fair and transparent way. And the flip side of that then is equity in relation to the treatment of social media and online, because I, as the chief executive of KCLR, your neighbouring station, am legally responsible for what goes out on our airwaves and can be called to a court of law to account. But the same procedures, structures, and, you know, codes of practice don't currently apply to online, you know, so...
Okay. Richard Bruton, just a brief response to that before I deal with one other issue.
Well, I think on the issue of, you know, this is an opportunity because, as Joe Biden says, you know, there's a chance to build back better after COVID. And one of the things we have to build back in a sustainable way is local media. And I think it is a golden opportunity that's coming with this media commission to actually, you know, hit the ground running and bring in some changes. On the issue of whether, you know, these platforms should be regarded as publishers and be legally accountable for everything that goes up, I think that is a much trickier issue to deal with. You know, I suppose you would be encroaching in a lot of people's freedom of expression if you start to make them public.
All right, well, so can I just make one point? Can I just make one point to you in regards to that? Because you, in the conclusion to your document, you say a diverse range of media coverage of local activity and strong journalism are essential for our local communities, and that point is well made. And we talk about, for example, freedom of expression, as you've just mentioned there. One of the biggest constraints on media in this country, and whether it be here in Kildare on KFM radio, are our three main newspapers, the Kildare Nationalist, the Liffey Champion and the Leinster Leader, is the whole area of the Defamation Act. And I know that in your submission, you're calling on the government to fulfil the programme for government in regards to publishing the statutory report on the Defamation Act, progress, publish and enact the Defamation Amendment Bill, the aim of which is to achieve an appropriate balance of the right to one's good name and freedom of expression. I mean, as currently delivered and applied, the Defamation Act is like a muzzle on media. And I'm not suggesting for a moment that it be a carte blanche and just a free-for-all.
Yeah, no, I think there's no doubt it has an enormous chilling effect, particularly on smaller outlets, because they don't have the deep pockets that the bigger ones can. And I think it's recognised that it has to be changed. And I suppose it's also recognised there has to be some other way of, if mistakes are made, you know, there has to be a reasonable correction. You know, I don't think either. I think the Defamation Act is hanging as a sword over people, but equally, I think there could be better systems for correcting mistakes and giving, you know, equal coverage to the correction as to the original story.
Indeed, so I can tell you, Minister, or I beg your pardon, Richard, that as a CEO here and as John Purcell will say, that we absolutely hover over anything that goes out, because the slightest error can impact the financial resources of any outlet, whether it be a local radio station or a local newspaper, so much out of all proportion to the issue in question. But final comment from both of you, John Purcell.
If I just may say...
Generally, John, not just on that.
If I may say in relation to, you know, the equity of the system, I mean, in contrast, while there's a chilling effect on let's call it mainstream media, on the other side, social media and online, it just, I know people who've attempted to seek redress legally for absolutely scurrilous stuff that's appeared online, and they've been told there's no point, you'll never get anywhere, it'll only make things worse. So there's an inequity there. But I think finally, this is a very positive debate. We welcome very much the fact that Fine Gael have made this submission. We think it's very good, well thought out. We welcome the consultation. But it's important that not only Fine Gael but wider society engage in this, because it's a very important issue for our society at large and the type of society we want and the local environment. We've gone through the COVID pandemic with the slogan, keep local, stay within your area. And we need to ensure that local media survives into the future.
And Richard Bruton, this submission, I suppose the big question for all of us is, it's a submission to the future of the Media Commission. What next now?
Well, I understand the Commission will report before the end of summer. So we will be facing into, you know, the new plans, the new budgets, armed with recommendations from the Commission. Now, I know money is always tight, but I think it's an opportunity for us to you know, carve out the pathway for the future here in a really important sector. I think we're delighted that the initiative we took has created a sort of a community around a set of proposals that have a good fighting chance now of succeeding, right, in my view.
Okay, well, thank you both. John Purcell, who's chairman of the Independent Broadcasters of Ireland and, of course, CEO of KCLR down Carlow Kilkenny Way, and Dublin Bay North TD Richard Bruton on that submission to the future of the Media Commission. Thank you both for your time and contributions this morning.
Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Some of your messages then. Hi Clem, wishing Kildare all the best of luck on Sunday. Up the Lily says Jerry D, who's in the Holy City. I presume you mean Rome, do you? In regards to that, somebody sent me a Twitter to something last night. You might just send me more details of that, because I really have been pressed for time trying to open website links and stuff like that. Also, does Richard Bruton have an opinion on the Catherine Zappone meeting and the subsequent appointment? Well, we were on to discuss a specific topic. Marion in Salon says, what Richard Bruton is attempting to do is to try and close down free speech altogether. Independent radio stations since the lockdown has been brought up by the government spouting state propaganda. Unfortunately, the problem today is mainstream media and the political establishment are all the one, which is basically communism. Investigative journalism is dead. Note, many of our government advisors are ex-employees, and you name national stations and national media in regards to that. Okay, it's simple. Ban Facebook, says another. It's destroyed the world. Who cares where you are or what you are having dinner? People putting up about their new kitchens and everything else in regards to that. Kira.
So yesterday, HICWA did recommend that people born between 1965 and 1985 in this country should be offered once-off testing for the hepatitis C virus. And joining us to discuss this is Dr. Maureen Ryan of HICWA. Good morning, Maureen.
Hello, Kira.
Tell me, why did HICWA make this recommendation?
So this recommendation was made on the back of a health technology, so a large piece of research work that we've conducted over the last while. What we found was that people who were born between 1965 and 1985, the prevalence of HCV infection is highest amongst that cohort. It's approximately 1 in 100 people born between 1965 and 1985 may have chronic hepatitis C infection.
Why are they more at risk?
Well, we're not sure, I suppose. We don't have great certainty as to why people born in that age group are at the highest risk. But one of the most common risk factors for hepatitis C is intravenous drug use. And intravenous drug use peaked in Ireland in the 1970s, 1980s and 1990s. So it really kind of covers, for the most part, people who were born during that age group, and then also people who may have been sexual partners of people who are involved in intravenous drug use. What we know is that of all of the people who have been identified with hepatitis C infection in Ireland between 2004 and 2018, over 70% of them were born, are in that birth cohort. And we also know that there's a high number of people who are undiagnosed. And that's not unusual when we think about the fact that for many people, it's a disease that it's silent. It has no symptoms for maybe 20 to 40 years. And during that time, there's progressive damage happening to the liver. So by the time somebody presents with symptoms, it's gone quite far. And they tend to be quite unwell. So if you can pick them up early, there's now very, very effective treatments that are available. You provide those treatments to people, then you can avoid them having any of those long-term consequences like liver failure, cirrhosis, liver failure, potentially being at risk of liver cancer for somebody who has cirrhosis, resulting in either liver failure or a requirement for liver transplantation. So that's what we're trying to avoid.
What are the symptoms?
Only 20% of people will have any symptoms at all. And if they do, they're usually mild. They use things like fever, pains and aches. They might get jaundice or might get an itch. But for most people, it's asymptomatic. About 20 to 40% of people will progress to cirrhosis. And cirrhosis is when you get scarring of the liver. Liver failure will present with, for example, with jaundice, with itching, portal hypertension, with the resulting possibilities of bleeding. So serious liver disease has very serious consequences for people.
Things like cirrhosis, you can still be diagnosed with that and have no infection of hepatitis C.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, hepatitis C is just one infection that causes cirrhosis. Cirrhosis is also related to lots of other things, like, for example, alcoholic liver disease or other infections indeed can cause cirrhosis of the liver as well.
Maureen, just moving on to talk about the actual testing itself, talk us through this. What exactly happens and how do people get in touch to get tested?
So this programme hasn't been approved for implementation yet. This is a piece of research work and advice that's going to the Minister for his consideration. He'll have to make a decision as to whether this becomes part of the services that are delivered by the public health system or not. If it was to be delivered, there are two mechanisms. One is what we call systematic birth cohort testing. And what that would mean would be that people would be invited via letter, they'd be invited to attend their GP, and it would be, you know, staged out over about 4 years, it would get through the entire that entire population. They'd be invited to attend their GP, they'd have a blood test taken, and then that blood would be tested for hepatitis C. If it came back positive, they'd be informed by their GP and then they'd be referred for treatment. So that's a systematic birth cohort testing program. Now, the other option is an opportunistic one, which would mean that just any time somebody came in contact, for example, with their GP, and if they were from that age cohort, the GP would advise them that they should get tested and would invite them back to have that blood test.
Would that mean that everybody who does get a positive diagnosis have to take some sort of combination of tablets?
The treatment is antiviral tablets, so either for 3 months or for 6 months, which, you know, depends on your clinical picture, which treatment regimen that you go on.
Now, I know obviously you gave the reason why it's that 20-year period, but there are going to be people, I'm sure, born in 1963, 64, 1986, that are going to be saying, I am a bit at risk myself. Also, this potentially, if it was to be given the green light, would it then be expanded?
So if somebody, for example, did feel that they were at risk or that they were in any way concerned, they can ask their GP to do this test.
Can you just contact your GP? Would it cost? How much is it? And is it a long process to actually get that testing done by your GP?
At the moment, through the risk-based testing, you can access it through the GP. And obviously it depends on whether you have medical coverage or not that would cover blood testing, or whether you need to pay privately. And the cost of it is probably somewhere less than €100. Probably in terms of how long it would take it to come back, it's probably a few weeks, I imagine, because it's a sample that has to be sent to a hospital laboratory to be processed.
On Wednesday, it was World Hepatitis Day, and on Wednesday, we were speaking with Christy Hayes, the head of advocacy with the Hepatitis C Partnership on Kildare Focus. The headlines were everywhere, but basically that this country is 20 years behind schedule because we've targeted to overcome this disease by 2030, which is in less than eight and a half years, believe it or not, time. Does this concern HICWA?
The HSE's Hepatitis C treatment programme was set up in 2015. 2 years later, the Minister endorsed a national clinical guideline on hepatitis C screening. And the reason for that was because we knew that that there was a large proportion of people who are undiagnosed with hepatitis C. So this screening guideline has been implemented in order to try and, you know, diagnose as many people as possible and to make treatment available to them. One of the recommendations in that screening guideline was to look and see whether a birth cohort testing program would be good value for money. And I suppose that's the piece of work that we've done now. We've said that even though it will be expensive, and it is an expensive program, it will cost about €66 million over 5 years to implement systematic birth cohort testing. But actually, it is good value for money. And that's because of the fact that the treatments are so effective, they deliver such clinical benefits, and you avoid long-term costs that would fall on the health service in terms of managing liver failure.
Dr. Maureen Ryan, Deputy Chief Executive and Director of Health Technology Assessment at HICWA, thank you so much. You're very generous with your time here at KFM, and we greatly appreciate it.
You're welcome.